Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this week we have The Return of the Saint. He's not been well recently, our saint, so it's good to hear him back in fine fettle with the latest podcast. Apologies that it's been 10 days, 2 weeks since our last podcast. I did think about doing a post-Rangers draw one, but I was too agitated after the refereeing decisions that were so atrocious, and then life got in the way of doing something thereafter. And talking of refereeing, I know some people listen to this and say, yeah, but we didn't play well, and accepted we didn't play well. We played poorly, they played very well. But do you know what? One of the things that really bugged me over the time as a Celtic fan is hearing people saying, do you know, we should be better than referees. Well, in the course of a season, we average, what, 2 goals a game, roughly, to win domestic matches. So for some reason, when we've played historically our biggest rivals, what people are actually saying is that we should score above average number of goals, and we should just accept that, poppycock. We should accept nothing. And things change games, and it would have been different if Miller gets sent off, if Holt gets sent off, if they don't get a free kick, and even, you know, much debate about the refereeing decision, oh, sorry, the managerial decisions of Brendan and the changes that he made. If the penalty gives in the last minute and then we go and score it, then people turn around and say, wow, again, Brendan gets it right because he brings on Griffiths and Griffiths wins the penalty. Anyway, enough of that. It's boring, isn't it? Let's go on to the podcast with Saint. I'll let him do the introductions and I will speak to you later.
Okay, it's my pleasure to be joined by Ali Palmer of Nutmeg Magazine. Now, Ali, I understand that you're an Ayr fan. What was your first game you can remember, and who was your first Ayr hero?
The first game I can remember, my dad taking me to Somerset. I think I would have been about 5 or 6, because I can still remember standing in the back of the cowshed at the railway end on a kind of sleeper, which meant I could stand a wee bit higher. Not that there was a big crowd in the way, but and I just remember it being misty, and I remember the opposition playing in sort of gold and black, so it was either Dumbarton or East Fife, I would imagine. So yeah, it was my first game, and I've been sort of following them ever since. Heroes, I mean, there's been a few over the years. Am I allowed to mention more than one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great team of this sort of around about 1970, led by Alex Ingram, but I suppose the players in that kind of team were John Murphy, Dick Malone, were players I hugely admired. 2 full-backs, I'd play right-back myself, so always looked up to them. And then I thought a great team in the sort of late 80s under Alan McLeod, it's a final spell there. And we won the then third level, whatever it was called then, I think it was the second division, quite easily, with a brilliant team that was led by John Sludden, former Celtic player, and Henry Templeton. It was just a joy to watch them. I know they're playing at a lower level, but you still have to play. Whenever you play good football, it doesn't really matter, and they're
really
a great side.
Yeah, Somerset was always a great ground to visit, particularly in the 70s when Ali was the manager. There's one particular game with Celtic fans that we all remember. It was a 7-2 game around about 1975, which was an incredible match.
Yeah, I was there. Kenny Dalglish ran the show that day, I think, from memory. Long time ago, though.
Yeah. And are Ayr still owned by Bill Barr?
No. Cameron Lachlan is his name, but he's based in America. So it's a kind of an odd It's not like what American owns, really. I mean, he's got family ties to here. But he runs a club from there and will appear occasionally. But he's, as far as I can see, he's pretty much kept the club alive by constantly getting the club loans. He's keen to sell it, but he's not going to sell it to anyone, which is good. But it's been a wee bit, you could argue it's been a bit, I don't know, people moan that we're not investing enough in it, but, you know, who's going to invest in a football team when it generally goes down the drain? I don't know what's going to happen with the ownership over the next few years, but I know he's keen to pass it on, but he needs to find the right person.
Because it was kind of ironic that Bill Barr was building everyone else's stadiums, but he never really did a lot for Somerset.
Yeah, it was a funny time when we were visiting grounds, and Celtic Park, one of them, Kirkcaldy, grounds all over Scotland with the Barr construction logo on it, which would have also been on our ships at the time. But it was just a difficulty with planning in here. He was desperately keen to build a stadium for here. I think there was a site just in the outskirts of the town, just near the main roundabout on the way in to here, which just had problems getting past, which was a shame, but at the same time, personally, I'm delighted we're still there. I love Somerset Park. I know it's seen better days, but it's a great place to watch football. I mean, I know every visiting team, you know, like this season we've had Hibs come to see us for the first time in a few years, and outside of cup games, and any Premier team that comes for a cup match, I mean, fans always talk highly of it. And I know the facilities are not great, and the club's doing its best to keep it ticking over, but it's still a great place to watch football.
I think that there's two grounds in Scotland that still have an old feel, and I mean that in a complimentary fashion. and one's Somerset, and the other one's Capello.
Although every time I sit in that stand at Capello, and I'm not that tall, it's incredibly uncomfortable. But yeah, it's a great ground. I like going there too. I used to like Old Brockville, and I don't mean like I'm talking about, you know, going back to the good old days, but I think if these grounds can be preserved, and if they can be, particularly the locations, I mean, I think that's the key. I mean, I was at Falkirk Stadium a few weeks ago, and yeah, it's a brilliant stadium, but you know, it's in a soulless part of town, and so many grounds are like that, and that's a shame. And they are a bit sort of featureless, you know, because they're put up, they're built as cheaply as they can be, which is not cheap, so there's no particular character to them, which is a real shame.
So we'll move on to Nutmeg then, the new periodical. You and I actually spoke back in January, but unfortunately the recording equipment didn't work, and you were at the initial stages at that point, and now we're on to is it issue 3?
Yes, issue 3 is just
so tell us a wee bit about yourself and how the idea for the magazine came around.
Yeah, my background is in design and magazine and newspaper design. I used to work at the Scotsman and Scotland Sunday a few years back, and I became a design consultant in my own design business in the late 90s, so I've been doing that ever since. But this idea to try and do a football publication, it's been kind of, I don't know, I've been thinking about it for quite a number of years. Always thought there was a market for it, and I know there's been a few attempts over the years, but then the Blizzard came around about, how many years ago, about 6-7 years ago, which is a very similar, I mean, we've been kind of influenced by it in terms of its format and the kind of feel of it, which is basically giving writers a lot of freedom to write to whatever length they want, and I kind of felt there was a, because the Blizzard don't do that many Scottish articles, and I'm a subscriber to it, and I enjoy getting it. I thought there was a market to do something similar with Scottish football, we would come out 4 times a year. It would be a publication, full of writing that you wouldn't necessarily find in other print medium, possibly online, but even then, it would kind of be a bit different. And I still have a kind of belief in print. I think there's a real value in it, and I think there's people out there that share that opinion and enjoy the feeling of getting something coming through the door, opening it up, smelling the ink. It's a very different experience, and therefore people read it in a very different way. We're not trying to be less than topical, although there will be elements of that in it. But we can't be too tongue-tied. We're not following a news agenda as such, so we don't have to be topical on the minute, responding to things that have just happened. We take a slightly more relaxed approach to the game, but hopefully done with enough love and passion for Scottish football, despite all its flaws, that comes across, and people who subscribe to it get that kind of feeling as well, or have that kind of feeling about Scottish football. But we're just trying to do something a bit different. And in this day and age, as I say, when most of us get a lot of our information from either our phone or our desktop or tablet or whatever, it's kind of nice to have a different reading experience every now and again.
Yeah, so it's a quarterly periodical, and it's priced £10 for a quite extensive 200 pages.
Yeah,
and
it's actually printed by a big printer in Glasgow. Mm-hmm. It's got quite long lead times from the time I send it to the time it gets in people's hands, because of the way it's printed. So it's a high quality, it's a book that you keep and I hope you cherish and collect. And so it has that element to it as well. It's not something you'd hopefully not something you throw away once you've read it. So it has a kind of value. I mean, yes, it's expensive for what it is, but trying to to produce something of that quality isn't cheap. I kind of felt we could have done something cheaper, but wouldn't have had the same value as to the reader, if you know what I mean. It's doing something a bit more substantial and of higher quality than you get in a magazine or a newspaper adds value to the whole product.
Now, if I understand correctly, it's subscription only, so why would you not make it available in the shops?
The main reason is that's a very difficult thing to do these days. I don't know how much people understand the logistics of getting a newspaper or a magazine into any kind of news agent or any place that sells magazines. It's really difficult these days, and there's a lot less of them. It's one of the as I said, I come from a newspaper background. It's another reason why people are buying less newspapers, because it's harder to find places to buy them. It's a vicious circle. As newspaper circulation declines, then people who sell them are less likely to want to sell them, so they become less places you can buy them. So it's very hard to get a publication like Nutmeg into whatever W. Smith or bookshops even. It also makes the whole process a lot simpler. There's one out there at the moment in Edinburgh, a place called Six Yard Box. Just kind of happened to go in one day and have a chat with the guy, and he said he'd take them. And if I could find the right places, I would certainly do it. But then it just means you have the logistical problems of physically getting them to these places. And by people subscribing to it to our website, we're just dealing directly with the reader. There's no news agent or bookshop or anyone else involved. Which obviously makes it harder for us to publicise what we're doing. But in this day and age, using Twitter and Facebook and just general word of mouth, it's a reasonably efficient way of people get to know about us. Otherwise, you only come across it if you just happen to see it in a news agent or a bookshop.
Now, we've had Scottish football magazines in the past, certainly when I was younger, we've had Scottish Football Monthly, Scottish Football Weekly, The Punter and Scottish Football Today. So they all sadly went under. So obviously you believe that there's a market out there for this to be sustainable.
And by amazing coincidence, I was actually speaking to the former publisher of The Punter yesterday, a chap called Alan Campbell, who's a football writer, so we're kind of swapping notes about our experiences. And in those days, it was very difficult, because of just what I've tried to explain in terms of getting your publications physically in front of potential readers. And those publications also probably needed a much higher circulation to be viable. And the other thing that's involved in publishing today, as opposed to 10 years ago and 20 years ago, it's a much it can be a much more streamlined process. So you don't have the same overheads. You know, you don't have to make so much money to make it viable, or sell so many copies rather to make it viable. So it's possible for I'm one of the few people physically involved in putting it together, but I have some friends and some volunteers in general that kind of help out, but we all work remotely from our homes, and so it's quite a streamlined process in that sense. I worked also in I used to work at my first job in the late 80s was working on a music magazine in Scotland, and in those days, just producing them was so complex compared with today. So things are easier today, and I also, as I mentioned earlier, I think there's a market for print now that do something slightly different today when we get so much of information from digital platforms, means that we have a chance of surviving because we're a bit different, we're a bit unique.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not competing with so many things as well.
Yeah.
I would say we don't have competitors in that sense. It's just it's websites and it's the Daily Press, but they work in a very different way.
Now, the difficulty can be that a genuine Scottish football publication shouldn't be over-reliant on Celtic and Rangers articles, as the other teams' fans are always quite rightly complaining about that. However, you do need everybody on board to be financially viable. Is it hard to find a balance to this?
To be honest, the subject matter, the articles that are finding their way into Nutmeg, are all that's being driven by writers. Okay, so at the moment, I'm not actively seeking or avoiding anything or any team or anyone. I'm not saying it should be full of articles on our two biggest teams or it shouldn't. It's not, it really isn't about that. It's simply about trying to find good stories about Scottish football. Now, whether that's, obviously, this year, 2017 is a big anniversary for Celtic, and there's other anniversaries coming around in terms of things like Queen's Park and Diplanic, and next year in a few years' time, the anniversary for Rangers Cup and his Cup win. But they're not necessarily following that kind of agenda, because everyone else will be doing that kind of thing. Having said that, in issue 2, we've got a couple of pieces about Lisbon, and that's felt natural to do. So I'm not saying we will or we won't do or cover any team. I think it's important that we are looking at stories, outside Rangers and Celtic. I think that's fair, because I just came off the phone just now just listening to one of the Sports Sound podcasts from Tuesday night, and I listened to Monday nights as well, and the only subject they were talking about was Rangers, and the game at the weekend, and I'm thinking there's other stories out there, and there's other audience out there. We don't have to just cover our two biggest clubs.
I've argued with people recently, and my argument is that in the last 5 years, it's been almost like a golden era of Scottish football, because so many teams have won trophies. It's, for example, the two Highland League teams have won trophies. St Johnstone won a Scottish Cup, Hibs have won a trophy, Kilmarnock, St Mirren, Hearts. This is something that a few years ago might have been unfathomable. Now, I think they've taken advantage of Rangers' demise to a certain degree, because obviously they haven't had their troubles to seek. That's their problem. But I don't think that the media in the country quite give the other teams the praise that they're due for what's been a fairly interesting period in Scottish football overall.
Well, you're absolutely right. It sounds like I'm criticising other media, and I'm not really, because I know what they have a job to do. They have to either sell newspapers or get listeners or whatever. So any newspapers that concentrate, you know, on Celtic and Rangers and whoever, I get it. I mean, you know, that's where a larger audience is out there. I don't think the BBC should be doing that, personally, because I think the BBC is there. BBC Scotland should be covering all Scottish football. They don't need to necessarily have huge listening or viewing numbers. And yes, Nutmeg's there as a sort of antidote to that, to be able to say, well, there's other teams and there's other stories out there. And as long as they're interested in Scottish football as a whole, and they all have our teams and we all want to read as much as we can possibly read about our own teams, I'm hoping that there's enough people out there who are just interested in the game as a whole and interested in reading about, you know, stories about other teams that are not their own.
Yeah, I've noticed that a few of the writers are very familiar. You've got guys such as Stuart Cosgrove, Michael Grant, and their own Michael Tierney. So are you relying on the more established writers, or are you looking for fresh new guys?
Oh, no, I mean, it has to be a mix. I mean, you know, we need, there's two needs, obviously, to have established names, partly is their own experience, you know, and the quality of the writing. Also to make some familiarity to potential readers. But a big thing that we are trying to do is uncover new names and to attract people who maybe don't, or are new to the whole thing. And I think we have already discovered some new writers, and that's a great thing. I mean, that's what we're trying to do, because it's very hard for anyone in journalism to get a break these days, and particularly in newspapers where the amount of space they have available, the budgets they have, are all shrinking all the time. So it's very hard for that. And of course, there's many websites out there and blogs, and that's a brilliant way for people to get exposure. But it's something that quite beats seeing your work in print, you know, and being able to offer that to less experienced, less well-known writers is a good thing. We also get a mix of types of people as well, which is great, and it's a big part of what we're trying to do. But we want, you know, people like Stuart Cosgrove, Hugh McDonald, and Kevin McKenna just wrote in issue 3. You know, these are all names, you know, people I kind of know from having worked in the newspaper industry for many years, and I suppose I'm kind of bending their arm a little bit to get them to do stuff for us. But equally, I want them to think, well, gives them a chance to write something that they can't normally get published on a day-to-day basis within their normal working experience.
So will Nutmeg be a more historical magazine, or would you be commenting on current affairs in the game?
Yeah, one thing I don't want is to become is all our yesterday's publication. That's not what we're about. History of football obviously is really important, and we all, as football fans, are always talking about things that happened, you know, whether it's last week, last year, or 10, 20, 50 years ago. So that's important to football, and there's a lot of brilliant stories that you still want to hear about and or uncover or whatever, and that's good. But I don't want, Nutmeg will not be a, as I say, an all our yesterday. So we do want to look at the game today. You know, we want to cover aspects of the game that maybe don't get talked about quite as much. It's interesting that before issue two, there were plans to try, which didn't quite come off, to try and look at whole series of people in the game that maybe weren't so well known that we thought were doing interesting things, and those names were Ian Cattell, Austin McPhee, Robert Rowan, all these guys who are involved in the game, but maybe just at a level you don't. So we want to cover that kind of aspect of football. We also want to, opinion. All the issues so far I've had in a classic newspaper style, an opinion section, which was never my intention, but it just kind of evolved naturally. And I think it's a good thing to do, to have a space in the in Nutmeg where people can be quite opinionated if they wanted to be. So that aspect as well. But yeah, I mean, I don't want it to be a for people to think they're just coming to Nutmeg to get writing about the past. It has to reflect what's happening in the game now and the future of the game. You know, it's all about that side of things as well is really important. Because I love Scottish football, but I know it's flawed. And if we can sort of create some debate within Nutmeg about the future of the game as well, then that's great.
So if you could change one thing within Scottish football, what would it be? What would be the one burning desire you would have to have changed?
That's a difficult one. Personally, not playing each other four times a year, I'd detest it. Similar in the way that I'm currently fighting for second bottom place in the league, and at the end of the season, we played them in the Challenge Cup, the League Cup, in four league games, six times this season. And that's not good. I mean, it's been brilliant this year for the year, my club being in the Championship, because I'm going to grounds, I've not been for a long while. And I think everyone enjoys that. I mean, you know, for Rangers fans going through the divisions, they're fun in that, I'm hoping. You know, for Hibs, Hearts playing in the Championship, you know, going to grounds I've not been to for a few years, that's a good thing. If we could change that, I'd love it. And I think a lot of fans feel the same way.
In terms of the league structure then, are you a 16 team man, or are you do you have any other ideas that could help?
I don't know. I think we all discuss with friends about what could be a better system, and I accept that you can only see the game right now. The system we have is probably the best, but I would like to see a bigger league, absolutely. About 16. I've been there in the 18 team league, and I've watched some pretty awful games. But you still get pretty awful games today. I think the idea of a bigger league that allows more teams, exposure of a top division, and in theory the possibility of teams. A slightly less element of fear factor, and hopefully, more younger players being given a chance to get game time. Who knows? Maybe the game's changed too much that wouldn't happen. I don't know, but yeah, a bigger league for me, absolutely. I don't know what the formula is, though. We'll keep playing with that, and if anyone fancies contributing some ideas to Nutmeg about that, I'll happily publish it.
It was noticeable this morning that the TV deal is being discussed. It's a few years down the line, nevertheless. And what we've got at the moment is a mismatch of Sky cherry picking the bigger games, and BT Sport basically picking up the crumbs. Now, if newspapers are to be believed, then BT Sports want to take more of a hands-on game. Hands-on approach to the taking on board all of Scottish football TV. Is that something you think could be advantageous?
I'll be honest, I don't have a subscription for it either, so I don't watch football TV to that extent. I don't know, and I don't really have an answer to that one. I do think TV has damaged the game a lot, in as much as I don't think the teams are compensated for the to the level they should, and the, you know, teams like Celtic having to go up to Dingwall on a Sunday 12 o'clock kickoff or whatever, that's not good for the game, you know. Even on a different level, the BBC Alpha contract that has games on a Saturday night at 5:15, you know, who wants to go to a game? And then teams are losing money, they're not being compensated properly. The Scottish League is fine. I read something recently about a percentage of annual income from match days. It's one of the biggest in Europe, if not the biggest. Our reliance on match days is still enormous. So they're giving in too much to television at the moment. Still, you know, slight lessons have not been learned. And it's one of these. One thing I am an advocate of is summer football. And if that was to happen, Scottish football would become so much more valuable to people like Sky and BT, because, you know, there'd be a 2-month period where, you know, we would actually be we'd be wanting to show it, and you know, we'd be able to demand larger fees, I would hope. But It's a difficult one, and TV gives exposure, it helps to a degree, but I don't think it really helps the fans.
So
and Scottish football needs fans, you know, as I just said, it's, you know, our game takes in a huge percentage of its income from match day, you know, turnstile, season tickets, whatever. It's, you know, we're not in the same league as, well, not even the same league as nations like, you know, Norway and Denmark and, you know, equivalent countries, where clubs make more money from their television in a pro rata sense than Scottish teams do.
I felt for a long while that the biggest problem we have in Scottish football is just terms of geography, because we're right next to England, and we get all the English razzmatazz coming over from south of the border, and we automatically hit ourselves with a stick saying that our game isn't good enough. Now, there's no way you can compare the game or the leagues in those countries, because in terms of the population, in terms of the investment, in terms of the finance. So I think we're often harder on ourselves than what we have to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're right. We're always comparing ourselves to what happens in England, and even to the point where we start to, you know, name our leagues the same way. It's like, you know, Scottish football is Scottish football, and we need to kind of stand up for what it is and not try and compare it to England. And, well, you know, it's always going to be that case. You know, we have the most, you know, the richest league in world football, I think, a nice thing, you know, right on our doorstep. That's obviously going to have an effect on how we do and how we perform, and how we compare ourselves and how we're compared to you as well. As you know, the piece that, you know, a lot of social media traffic a couple of weeks ago that was written in the Times that I've still not read, obviously, because it wasn't published up here. You know, that's the point of Scottish football. Well, you know, we all know this. There's a huge point in Scottish football. And there's a lot of people who are still passionate about it and love it. And even though it's not perfect at the moment, and, you know, having a league that's dominated by one team so strongly is not good for the game. Of course, it isn't. I don't think Celtic need that or want that either. But neither is, you know, two teams dominating. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, nobody really knows, but. Yeah, we have to find a way that makes Scottish people are more competitive. But it's a difficult thing to fix.
I think if there was a way of Celtic and Rangers getting to another league, whether it's a European league or a an English league, the Scottish league would be very, very competitive. You know,
I completely agree. I mean, all the talk over the years about Rangers and Celtic going to
wherever,
to England or wherever, the North Atlantic League sort of raising its head again. If that happened, I think, and then people talk about the Scottish game would die. Of course it wouldn't. Who's going to invest it? Again, I'll use my club because I understand it. Air United, small club, 1,200 people go along with it if we're lucky, 1,200 home fans. Who's going to invest in the Air United? Nobody, because there's not, where could you take that club in 5 years and 10 years' time? If Rangers and Celtic weren't part of the equation, because Rangers and Celtic skew the Scottish game. Obviously, they're two enormous clubs in a small country. If they were within a different league structure, and we're talking about Rangers, if they were the second team, obviously they're not at the moment. But we know in terms of potential and potential income, they are. If those teams were not playing in Scottish football every week and were part of another league, Scottish league would be hugely competitive. It would obviously be still dominated by the bigger city teams, but any team in Scotland would look on it as there would be potential for them to become one of the top teams, be it Dundee or Falkirk or Kilmarnock, and so people would start investing in the league again, or in the teams again. I think, I might be completely naive about that, but I think it'll happen. I'm convinced it's going to happen at some point. I don't think it'll be the English league. But then, as a Celtic fan, would you be excited about Celtic versus FC Copenhagen? Maybe Ajax sounds good, but bored with that eventually.
Yeah, I know what you're saying there, but I think there has to be the next step, at different times, all sports advance on to the next level.
Of course.
I get tremendously frustrated, not only for my own club, but, I can think of the Ajaxes and the Benficas and Anderlecht, who were tremendous teams in European football, who are getting to the stage now that they're having to sell their best players to Bournemouth. Because of the desperate money that's been offered by English clubs due to the TV deal.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Bournemouth, which is a great story. I think we all look at that thing, all well done, but look at their stadium and look at their history. And you look at, Dunfermline, in theory, a bigger team in terms of history and stadium than Bournemouth. That Hibs air game a few weeks ago, and looking at Easter Road, you're thinking, this is bigger than Bournemouth. This is bigger than probably some other grounds, and top level grounds in England that's bigger than as well. So, yes, you're absolutely right. The teams all over Europe are suffering. Second level, third level of countries, be that Belgium, Holland, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, and down to Portugal as well. And these countries are suffering. The teams are suffering in the same way as Celtic and Rangers are. But whether a league that included teams from those countries or not, I don't know. I don't think it's a big issue these days in terms of transport and even for fans. Fans getting on a plane to Copenhagen or Amsterdam or whatever. It's not quite the big deal it was. The logistics of having a league like that, which is a bit like, if you look at North America and the North American League, the teams, travel, coast to coast sometimes. A fixture list will be arranged in such a way that, they might play two or three games in that region over a week or so. The logistics, it can be done. And it would benefit our two big clubs, and it would benefit Scottish football as a whole. Obviously, whether it happens or not, who knows, but I'm sure it's getting closer.
So this is the your free chance for a free plug for Nutmeg. I trust that there's maybe people out there who aren't aware of it. So for those people who don't know what's going on, why should any fans listening consider buying the next edition of Nutmeg?
Well, the best thing is to support independent magazines, because that's what we are. Support writing about the Scottish game. Support people who are passionate about the Scottish game. Give us a chance. If you take out, you can subscribe, you can order one issue, see what you think of it. Obviously, if you subscribe to us, you're helping us long term, sustain what we're trying to do. We're trying to be an alternative to, what you get day to day in some mainstream media. If you're interested in only one team, be that Celtic or whoever, then you don't want to read about other teams, then Nutmeg's probably not for you. If you're interested in the game as a whole and you want some great writing about Scottish football, then I think you're the place to come.
So if you're broad-minded and intellectual, Nutmeg's the publication for you.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Hold on a wee second, Alec. Sorry about that. Yeah, so we're just about to wrap up anyway. That was really just was just a bit funny because you've done your wee your free plug for the mag, and so I'll just wrap up now.
Okay.
Well, I'd just like to thank Ali for taking his time to speak to us and wish him every good luck for the future with the Nutmeg publication, and hopefully Scottish football can have its own publication once again that will be long standing this time. So thanks for your time, Ali.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thanks, enjoyed that again. It's quite hard to go over stuff again, but
yeah.
Sounds all right.
Okay, thanks.
Once again, another excellent interview and an excellent podcast from St. Anthony, and hopefully he'll be getting well soon. I know he's popping in for a little operation in about a month's time, just in time to be back out for the Lisbon and hopefully treble celebrations, and all that stuff has been announced that's raising money for the foundation. So if you're going, hopefully everything to do with May the 25th will coincide with the treble celebrations, and it's going to be fantastic, whatever. Anyway, also happening in the world was the dreadful events down in Westminster, and our own podcast guest, Mr. Kevin Schofield, found himself right in the middle of it. Fortunately, he came out safe at the other side. But if you want to find out more about how he got on and make sure that he's safe and well, you can listen to the Politics Home website, which is Kevin and a couple of posh guys talking every week about politics down in London. Anyway, that's me done for advertising somebody else's podcast. That's my brown envelope sorted for it. And I will say enough of me, apart from next week, the Celtic Grave Society will continue their quests to commemorate players of the past, and they will be in Prague to commemorate Johnny Madden. And we will have more about that on the next podcast with a tale from the wiki. Anyway, enough of me. That was him, St. Anthony, talking about Nutmeg magazine, and this is a wee tune for Gregor Kyle and Musa and his agent. Just enough time for me to say good night and God bless. Good night. Give us up a little cuddle, that there's no place to see a fight, a metal skirt waddle. Dabbles to a furnace, but she's Dashiell's model. They call her the Dashiell when she looks like Elsa. I don't want to go to Chelsea. Oh no, that's not moving.